Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Let me start with the NBA offseason. I want to get some thoughts in before I have Lee Jenkins on next segment. Like, the NBA offseason to me is the greatest offseason, and there's nothing that's even close. I mean, think of all the great stories from over the years. The DeAndre Jordan emoji fest slash hostage situation. Legendary. But even since the last year, look at everything we've seen. Chris Paul traded to Houston. Paul George traded to OKC. Melo traded to OKC. Kyrie Irving traded to Boston. Paul George stays in OKC. LeBron goes to LA. And, of course, the annual Dwight Howard meeting, which I'll get to later on. I mean, honestly, nothing is better. Nothing is better, and nothing is even close. And on top of that, there's even more. Because of all those things that I mentioned, none of those things can touch the bizarre saga of Kawhi Leonard in San Antonio. And part of what makes that story so beautifully weird, and as always, weird is awesome, is that neither the Spurs nor Leonard ever say Jack. Both sides are mime-like in that regard, so it's nearly impossible to decipher exactly what's going on. It's hard to know what's real and what's not. It's hard to know who's the bad guy here and who's not. I mean, did the Spurs screw this thing up by damaging that relationship with Kawhi over his medical situation? Or are Kawhi and his team shooting dirty pool? It's almost impossible to know. Now, friend of the program, Tom Haberstroh, had ESPN Spurs reporter Michael C. Wright on the back-to-back podcast, and some of the intel that was dropped here is gold. For instance, this one from Wright. Wright says that Kawhi wants to play. We know this. That he wants to play in Los Angeles. We know that. However, while it's Los Angeles, it might not be where you think it is. Quote, the Lakers are not Kawhi's preferred destination anymore. He wants to go to the Clippers because he doesn't want to go and be second fiddle to LeBron. That's what I was told. I was told by somebody that would know. So right now, the Clippers are where he wants to go. But I'm also told, I talked to people within the Spurs organization, and they're like, yeah, he wants to go to the Clippers, but their assets are bleep at this point, end quote. So now dude wants to go to the Clippers, not the Lakers, allegedly. Okay. Here, let me see if I have this straight. Kawhi doesn't want to play. And follow this for a minute. Kawhi does not want to go to LA and be second fiddle to LeBron with the Lakers. Yeah, that's fine. But he's willing to go to a team that is the very definition of second fiddle. The LA Clippers. Well, that makes no sense. Nor does the notion that he'd rather play with Wesley Johnson than LeBron. So this guy wants to go to a team that is the very definition of second fiddle. But oh no, I'm not playing second fiddle to LeBron. I'll just play second fiddle to the entire team. Hey, listen, I understand that Lob City changed a lot of minds for a period of time, but the Clippers are not the Lakers. And if Kawhi is thinking that he'll get the same shine as the face of the Clippers as he would contending for a championship with LeBron, my dude is in for a hell of an awakening. Then again, at this point, Kawhi is a tougher read than LeBron himself. I mean, would you rather be the man and have everybody looking at you at Applebee's or living large with another celebrity in the house at Morton's? I mean, from a publicity standpoint, from a hype standpoint, the second fiddle on a championship Lakers team is the whole damn orchestra compared to the first fiddle on the Clippers. And it's not like it would even be like that forever. I mean, while it may seem like it, LeBron is going to age out at some point. It may seem like he's not going to, but he will. He's going to age out at some point, and probably sooner than later. And if LeBron is competing for rings with the Lakers, and you're competing for a playoff spot with the Clippers, then yeah, you're in Los Angeles, but technically you're not really in Los Angeles. Kawhi, I'm trying to help you out here. If LeBron is competing for rings in LA, and you're just trying to make the playoffs in LA, you're not really in LA. It's like being in Azusa or West Covina. I mean, yeah, it's easier to say you're in L.A. than to get into the details of the San Gabriel Valley. And you can see the downtown skyline if you drive around a little bit. But no, you're not really in L.A. Not if LeBron is with the Lakers and you have a chance to go there. And as weird as that whole thing is, that's not even close to the strangest thing that Wright had to say on that podcast. He also dropped this gem, quote, "There was a point during Kawhi's rehab process in New York that some of the Spurs brass went out to see him in New York. As soon as those guys arrived to the building, Kawhi's people grabbed him and sequestered him to another part of the building. And so the Spurs people couldn't even see him," end quote. I mean, come on. Hold up. What? The Spurs came to check on their franchise player to see how his rehab was going since he decided to do it away from the team. And then when Kawhi's people found out, they tried to hide him somewhere in that building. Hide him from the team that is paying him. They hid their guy. Hid him from what? Hid him from who? What did they think the Spurs were going to do? Kidnap him? I mean, come on. If this is true, if that really is true, that is one of the weirdest, most absurd things I've ever heard in one of the weirdest, most absurd stories I've ever heard. Why the hell would you hide Kawhi somewhere else in the building when the team is just coming to check on him? Exactly what do you have to hide? Were they hiding him from Tony Parker because of all the mean things he said? Were they hiding him from Pop because he said, "You'll have to go ask Kawhi's group what's going on"? Did they think the Spurs were there for a game of New York City hide and seek? And they were just looking for their spot. Were they going to then double down with a game of Marco Polo? Did they think the Spurs were going to stuff Kawhi in a sack and take him back to San Antonio? I mean, this is not a movie. This is not how that works. Kawhi is listed at 6'7", 230. Unless the Spurs sent Tiago Splitter to act as the muscle and shove him into some white, unmarked van, I think Kawhi probably would have been all right if he met with the folks who were scratching his checks. Look, I'm not going to say that just because the team pays your salary, they're entitled to pry into every single aspect of your life. I'm not saying that at all. But if you've been away from the team and they want to meet with you and check on your physical status, maybe you meet with them instead of looking to post up in the nearest broom closet. Again, exactly what do you have to hide from them? You got to be for the team that's paying you, then sit down man to man, hash it out. Don't hide from the man. I mean, if true, that is one of the wackest, most terrible looks ever. Hiding from your team. Quick, man, get him out of here. Hey, Kawhi, there's an escape door over there. There's a broom closet, man. Just stay there till they leave. Listen, I want to be clear about this, too. I don't know how much of this is true, but Kawhi and his advisors couldn't look much worse if it is true. And if this isn't going to help, and it's not going to help him get out of San Antonio, if anything, it's going to hurt his trade value because it makes him and the people around him seem like they're a disaster. We're a couple of weeks now from Greg Popovich getting the USA basketball team together for a mini camp in Vegas. Is Kawhi going to be there, or is he going to go rocket Ishmael and have his people roll him out in a hamper so nobody sees him? I've given this guy the benefit of the doubt. But, and I am hedging, but if these reports are true, it is impossible to do so at this point. If this guy literally was hiding from the team when they came to check on his physical status, I can't give this guy the benefit of the doubt because that is straight whack. Lee Jenkins. Good morning, Lee. How are you?
Great, Jim. How are you doing?
Super. Great to talk to you. Lee, I thought you had a great piece breaking down the decision-making process for LeBron James that led him to the Lakers. Let's go back to 3 days after the finals ended. He's having a root canal. What was his mindset and emotional state like at that point?
You know, Jim, I think he was looking... I think every time these guys make these decisions, it comes right on the heels of the finals, right? Right on the heels, generally, of failure. So, you know, watching him kind of leave Quicken Loans Arena that night after Game 4, I mean, it was... It was a guy who'd been slamming his head into a wall probably for a few years and was thinking about what place would give him the best chance to get some results against the Warriors. And I don't necessarily know if he picked the right spot, the best spot for that, given the Rockets and the Sixers' talent. But I think that the Lakers kind of captured his imagination. He always sort of thinks big, right? He thinks grand. Like when he went to Miami, it was a grand plan. Going back to Cleveland, I think he sort of fell in love with the idea of that story and avenging what had happened there. And the Lakers, I think, speaks to something, another sort of large challenge and something where there would be tremendous upside if you were able to pull it off.
Business owners, I'm talking to you. I know you have so many things to do every single day. I'm a business owner myself. Take one thing off your list by going to stamps.com. I love it. So what you need to do is create your own Stamps.com account. You can do so in minutes online with no equipment to lease and no long-term commitments. Click, print, mail, and you are done. Stamps.com brings all the amazing services of the U.S. Postal Service right to your fingertips. Once again, I have used Stamps.com for a long time because it is so fast, it is so easy, it is so convenient, and it does save me money. Right now, you too can enjoy the Stamps.com service with a special offer, which includes a 4-week trial plus postage and a digital scale. All you have to do is go to stamps.com, hit the microphone at the top of the homepage, and type in jungle. Once again, I love this service. I know you will too. Go to stamps.com and enter jungle. Lee Jenkins joining us. All right, so it's interesting when you talk about how that process went. One of the big differences, though, this time, Lee, is the speed in which he made the announcement. Why do you think he made that call as quickly as he did?
I feel like he was leaning this direction for a while. I don't know that for a fact, but you heard so much smoke around the NBA for about a year about LeBron's going to go back to the Lakers. I mean, really, it was even more than a year. And during the finals, I felt like it ramped up even more. And as of last weekend, it was almost, now it was a sure thing, but it felt like everybody was saying that was a hard lean for him. And I think there was sort of a desire not to put Cleveland through. I mean, it's going to be a ringer either way, right? It's going to be a circus either way. But to try to make it as painless or as understated as he could, again, probably an impossibility with him. But I think that was a lot of the motivation, was that if he knew what he was going to do, you know, this time he was going to try to do it quickly. I mean, you look at the difference in the delivery of each of these free agent decisions going back to 2010, and it's been a pretty dramatic change.
Lee Jenkins joins us. Now, Lee, one thought was that he was coming to L.A. to link up with Kawhi Leonard,
right,
or Kawhi Leonard and Paul George. So what's it say about his process and his motivation that he made that move with no certainty that Kawhi was coming and knowing, in fact, that Paul George was not coming at all?
Yeah, and look, when I saw Paul George, when it came out that he was going back to Oklahoma City for sure, and then LeBron didn't commit that night, I was actually wondering, does this mean he's having second thoughts? Does this mean this could go another way? The way it was explained to me by people who know him is that it's a longer play than that. And there's risk in a 33, turning 34-year-old making a long play. But I think the idea is, you got Magic Johnson, there's cap space, there are young players who could either develop or could be traded for stars. And you've got like the Laker lure, right? And as he ages, and maybe he's not the main lure or the biggest lure in the NBA, then he'll have the Lakers with him. You know, it's a celebrity marriage in that way. And then he'll have, you know, something else there to offer free agents, to offer other players to play with him, and that he might be able to pick off, you know, another couple championships when he's older. Because clearly, if you look at this team for this year, it's hard to imagine them not being the team that's going to knock off the Warriors.
Yeah, certainly not this year. Now, Lee, when you mentioned the free agents, one of the thoughts has been that part of the reason why other free agents did not want to come to the Lakers in the past was either the presence of Kobe Bryant on the roster or the specter of him in retirement. No matter how much success you had as a Laker, Lee, you'd still be in Kobe's shadow. I understand that Kobe's or LeBron's not like the others, but what's your sense as to the dynamic between LeBron and Kobe?
I think it's amicable. I wonder how this looks. I just wonder how it looks, Jim, if they lose. You know, and it's not just if they lose a little bit in the beginning, the way they did in Cleveland or the way they did in Miami. I mean, if they're, because by the tone of your voice, you think they'll be what? You think they'll be fifth in the West? Or like, where do you put them?
Yeah, see, that's the thing. I think that next year, the thinking is you get into the postseason, but they're not a threat to anybody next year, Lee. We know this. In fact, what's really weird to me, Lee, is that you've got LeBron, and I can appreciate the long play here, but I think this guy is literally going to, I don't want to say waste, but he's giving away a prime year of his career when he's running out of time, because we know he's not going to win next year. No, we know that for a fact.
The reason I asked was, okay, so how does that look if he's their fifth or sixth in the West, and, you know, Kobe's... Yeah, I don't know. Kobe's on Twitter and LeVar's on his shows, and you start to get that kind of needling from a Laker fan base that clearly has high expectations, you know, much higher than, you know, probably would have been in Cleveland. And I think the way these guys look at things, the way people like Kobe Bryant look at them and LeBron James and probably Michael Jordan's, they don't see that, right? They don't look at the worst-case scenario. There's so much confidence, and that's part of what makes them great. It's part of what I think shields them from those sorts of failures. But you do kind of wonder if they don't get Kawhi and if it does sort of slide in a way that's more dramatic, if they are losing a lot more than what he did, let's say, even in Cleveland when you kind of felt him, I mean, from afar, it felt like crisis, right, at times with the Cavs and at times with the Heat. So what if it really is like their fifth or sixth? You know, how does he respond to that? How does, from afar, Kobe and LeVar and the Laker fan base respond to that? So there is risk for him personally.
I agree.
If it goes sideways.
Yeah, I was going to say, excuse me, I really agree. I think there is risk. I think that his legacy, while intact, is not bulletproof. I think that could be a really bad look for him. That said, if he stays in Cleveland, no matter what he does, he's fine. If he goes to, say, Houston, he's got a much better chance of winning. So if he's assuming all this risk and it's the path of greater resistance, why, in fact, is he doing it?
Well, because I do think long-term, I mean, let's play it out to, like, 36, okay? And I know maybe that's too deep, 35, 36, 37. And those are years when, if you're Kobe, Michael, like, their games, they aged okay, but they're still scorers, right? They're not going to age probably as well as LeBron James has the capacity to age. You could put him in the post. He could pass out of it. You know, when you think about the way he plays, it's not so crazy to think of him later on in life as a really good second, even third option when he's older, still picking off titles. If you're going to do that anywhere, probably LA is as good a place as any to be able to do that, because you'll always be able to get players. Now, his lure for other players is, again, Paul George didn't come to LA. Kyrie Irving did ask out of Cleveland. So that is probably a good conversation worth having. But the Laker lure, I think, is still really solid, even though they've whiffed these past several seasons.
We're talking to Lee Jenkins for a few more moments. Lee, what about that point, though? Is there something to it? I mean, I could say Kyrie Irving didn't want to play with him, or I could say, well, Kyrie is kind of a different cat. Well, Paul George didn't want to play with him, but Paul George is kind of a different cat. Kawhi may or may not want to play with him as well. I mean,
they're all different cats.
They're all different cats, though, right? These are all different guys. So does this say something about LeBron, or does this say something about all the other guys who may not want to play with him?
Well, right, everybody's in a different point in their career. Everybody has something else that they want to satisfy, right? Kyrie Irving wanted to see probably how good he could be, in the same way James Harden saw how good he could be in Houston. So something else drives everybody. I do think there will be enough players who will want to play with LeBron James, but look, there's clearly a shadow. There's a huge shadow, and if you want to be a star and if you want to be the guy who fronts a franchise, then no. Then obviously that would probably be an impediment. If you're someone who just wants to get to the finals and wants as many open shots as you can get, well, he'll get them for you. So it probably depends on the player. But I do think him aligning with the Lakers, you know, if it's in Cleveland, it's all about him, right? Everybody is just going there because of LeBron. In L.A., there are other factors, and Magic's one of them, too. I think he was able to connect. I think the idea of partnering with somebody who really is so much like him. I don't think LeBron always played like Magic, probably, but in these past several years, when you think about the business stuff and the charity and kind of his off-court demeanor and the way he is at press conferences, he's become more like Magic for the league, probably more than Jordan.
I think so too, Lee. I think that Magic, there seems to be a sense that, oh, he was coming. He was coming no matter what, and it didn't matter who was in that spot. I don't buy that. I think that Magic deserves credit. I think Magic is one of the reasons why LeBron came here. And I think if Magic were not in that spot, and Jim Buss and Mitch Kupchak still were, I'm not so sure he's coming. Let me finally ask you this. What about Kawhi, Lee? In terms of Kawhi, there are conflicting reports. And, man, that story is so weird.
Yeah,
who knows what you can believe? Do you personally, Lee, think it's more or less likely that Kawhi would come to the Lakers because LeBron is there?
My sense on that was that he still wanted a front of franchise, that he didn't necessarily want to be part of the super team. But that's more speculative than anything. And so even though that was kind of my sense of where his group sort of wanted him, had that word again, that they sort of wanted him to be the guy somewhere and not necessarily fall in behind a player, which would definitely open the door for a team like the Clippers. But the longer this goes on, Jim, I wonder if a team doesn't take the same shot Oklahoma City did, because it feels like they're going to reach a sticking point with Brandon Ingram and the Lakers. And if that is a sticking point, it does open the door for a random to come in, somebody we don't necessarily expect, and just take a shot on a year with Kawhi Leonard.
Yeah, and didn't that show people that nothing's sure, nothing's a lock, you never really know? And then a last follow, Lee, I love what you just said about that group and that word again. Do you buy that report that group hid that player from the brass of that team? And if so, what do you make of that?
Yeah, I do buy it. It's a great reporter and somebody who's well-sourced in that organization. So, no, I totally buy it. And I mean, that thing just went obviously that relationship just went so sideways with them, and really speaks to kind of the larger impetus on these teams, these coaching staffs, these front offices. It's hard to get these guys. It's hard to get. There are only about 10 of them in the world who really matter. And when you get them, you've got to preserve that relationship with them, with the people around them. I think it's different than baseball, than football. I mean, you saw a little bit of it maybe with Tom Brady, but the people around these people are often just as important as the player at the center of it. And that's probably more true of Kawhi Leonard than anybody, because it's not a strong personality and it's not a big communicator. So if you're trying to get the real deal out of him, a lot of times you have to go to the people who are probably a bit on the periphery of him. And in this case, something was lost.
Lee Jenkins, senior writer for Sports Illustrated, joins us once again. Lee, you're the best. Thank you very much. And it's always great to talk to you on the show, Lee.
Thanks, Jim. Appreciate that, man.
We go to parody. Smack Larry. Larry, what's going on?
Jim, thanks for the fine. Hey, listen, the smack-off season is in full swing. The big event is right around the corner, and some of us still want that golden ticket. But I got some info for you, buddy, about Mike and Indy. I found out where he is. He's getting fitted for his bridesmaid dress when he once again finishes second and left in this year's smack-off. However, Mike is doing his happy dance, however, after learning that you created the left rule, not letting anyone in the Brum Buster studio. So much for the Laguna Beach Billy parachuting in and landing on the bullseye on James Kelly's aircraft flight deck while wearing a paisley shirt that he stole from Hawk that he bought for a buck at the store. Hey, if you're going to drop in, you better have something for your favorite sparrow. So I guess that gimmicky big ear bitch better start working on a new angle if he wants to get...
That's not a new car. No. You don't like that car.
I don't like that car.
Ice Cube is my guest. Cube, good morning. What's up? How are you?
Yo, what up, man? How you doing?
Good, good, Cube. I mentioned you're in Oakland with the big three tonight, so let me start right there. Now that LeBron is a Laker, do you feel like you're going into Oakland, home of the Warriors, with a little more swagger, a little more bounce in your step?
Yeah, without a doubt. You know what I mean? We don't have to just get beat down. You know, we are contenders, so to speak. We just got to put it together. And, you know, to be honest, the Lakers did pretty good against the Warriors last year, you know, without LeBron. So I think, you know, we're going to be some formative opponents.
Ice Cube joining us. You know, Cube, it seems to me a lot of guys might be kind of scared or uncomfortable with being a Laker because, you know, it carries a lot of pressure, a lot of responsibility. So what's it say about Bron that he wants that challenge and he wants that responsibility?
I think it's great. You know, he'd been part of a of a great organization when it comes to the Heat. And now to, you know, maybe end his career with a storied franchise like the Lakers, you know, it's only right. You know, it reminds me kind of, you know, Reggie Jackson going to the Yankees, you know, at a certain point and ending his career with a storied franchise, even though he was a champion. So this is great. It's great.
Ice Cube joining us. He's in the Bay Area for the Big Three. We'll talk about that in a minute. Cube, I got to ask you, though. For a long time, there was this thought that Paul George wanted to come home and be a Laker and play for the team that he dreamed of playing for as a kid. And it started to look like that might happen, and he might join up with LeBron in the purple and gold. But instead, he decides to stay in OKC. As a Laker fan, what do you make of that? And do you feel like you're betrayed on any level because of that?
Not at all. You know, he ended up going to OKC after the Pacers. And that's the thing why you don't let a player, you know, when you can get him, you try not to let him go nowhere else because they might get comfortable. They might like it. He might like what he has going with Russell Westbrook. So I don't feel betrayed because he was never a Laker. You know, and some people don't want to play for their hometown because it brings on a whole lot of other distractions that they wouldn't get, you know, out of town. So people have their reasons, man. I ain't going to hold it against you.
And I get that, except the one thing was he did say he wanted to play for his hometown. But, you know, he changed his mind. He had a good experience in OKC. Hey, what do we make, Cube, of this report that Kawhi Leonard, this is interesting. What do you make of the report that he really wanted to be a Laker, but now that LeBron's there, he might want to be a Clipper because he doesn't want to play second fiddle to LeBron with the Lakers? I mean, when you hear that, what do you think? Does it make any sense to you that he would pass up a chance to win a ring with the Lakers so he could be the man with the Clippers?
That don't make sense to me. You should go somewhere where you can win. And, you know, his best chance of winning in L.A. is with LeBron James. Now, you want to be the man somewhere, you know, I mean, join the Clippers, I guess. You'll be the man on the Clippers. I don't know what that's going to get you. But, you know, being the man on the Lakers or helping to bring a championship in, you know, if Kobe and Shaq can do it, and Magic and Kareem can do it, LeBron and Kawhi can do it.
You keep to that point. If LeBron wins a ring or even rings with the Lakers, would anybody even notice Kawhi Leonard and the Clippers are playing in Los Angeles?
No. I mean, nobody noticed them now. you know, they, you know, the Clippers, you know, I'm real hard on the Clippers, you know, but they need their own stadium. They need their own everything. And they need to, you know, to kind of get an identity because, you know, ever since they came to L.A., it's always been second fiddle, and that's not going to change.
We're talking Ice Cube. Right, Cube. Sorry about that. Let me ask you one last thing. We'll see how it plays out, and we'll see who comes to play with LeBron. Do you think he's going to win a ring or even rings with the Lakers? How do you think that thing ends with him there?
I think we could get a ring, you know, multiple rings. It depends on the players around him. You know, we already know what LeBron is going to do, but, you know, what are the other guys going to do? You know, that's why I think Magic brought in players that wasn't necessarily just going to bow down to how LeBron wanted, but players with their own identity. Because that's what it's going to take. It's going to take players to have their own identity, but to know their role, but to play and not just be a subservient to LeBron, but to actually play how they know how to play.
Cube's joining us. All right, Cube, appreciate your thoughts on all that. Let me ask you about the Big Three. One of the cool aspects of the league is that you're in different cities every single week, which means that every week is a homecoming for some of the guys, either where they grew up or where they played back in the day. As an example, this week is a homecoming for Steven Jackson and Baron Davis, who both played for the Warriors. Do you notice an extra level of intensity when guys are playing in front of their fans?
No doubt. Coutinho was playing in front of Houston fans, and he was laser-focused. He did not want to play. I saw the same thing when he went to Philly and played in front of his hometown fans. So, guys, I saw it in Boozer and Nate Robinson in Chicago. So when guys go back to where they played, they want to do well. They want to win the game. They want to get that good feeling, you know, walking out the arena. So you do get a little extra edge from them. And that's cool. That's what it's all about.
You know, it's cool. You mentioned Coutinho. Man, Coutinho is one of my favorites. You got the great thing about this, I mean, part of this is nostalgia. I mean, you got guys who want to play and want to play hard, and the competitive drive kicks in. But it's just kind of cool to get another look at guys that were so cool back in the day, which I'll get to in a minute. But let me ask you about what's going on tonight. I mean, you've got the slate of games that we'll get to in a minute, but before we get to the legends who are playing tonight, you've got a pair of legends performing before the game tonight. Who's going to be on the mic in Oakland before the games, and how pumped up are you for that?
Yeah, we got them going at halftime. We got Short, who, you know, is one of the godfathers of the Bay Area. And we got E-40, who, you know, he just continues to crank out good music. And, you know, so much dialogue, so much dialect in the rap game is attributed to E-40. So to have these two Bay Area legends, you know, performing at halftime of our games, games two and three, it's, you know, to me, that's what the Big Three is all about, the intersection of, you know, great sports and great entertainment and, you know, having fun and seeing some good basketball.
Ice Cube joining us. And then tonight's games, you have the Power, led by, as we mentioned, Coutinho Mobley, Corey Maggette, Cube, who I thought was one of the most explosive athletes I ever saw, Coach Nancy Lieberman. Then you've got Tri-State, led by Amari Stoudemire, Nate Robinson, who you mentioned, Jermaine O'Neal, who I always love talking to and watching play. They're both undefeated. Only one of them will be after tonight. What do you make of the way these two teams have played so far?
To me, these are the two best teams in the league. You know, three-headed monsters, you got to throw them in there. But these two are, you know, this is our premier game of the week. And, you know, great. Both of them are coached great. Both of them execute great. And they all got, you know, great kind of, you know, marquee athletes. So, to me, this is what you watch for, you know, to see guys go at it. And especially undefeated teams that want to stay undefeated.
You're in the Bay Area tonight. Let me ask you this, too, before you go. We've talked in the past about the quality of play in the league and especially the shooting range that some of these guys have, but there's also a certain physicality in the paint. How would you describe how hard guys are going at it under the basket?
Well, you know, from NBA guys that's currently in the NBA, they say it's playoff-level intensity, you know, in the paint or just the play period. You know, each game is like a playoff game because we only have 8 regular season games. And you only really get to play each other once until you see them in the playoffs. So, you know, guys got to get it in. You don't have time to you know, kind of like, you know, take a rain check or you know, dial it in. You got to really go after and get this victory because every L puts you further and further out the playoffs.
Cube, last thought. I mentioned this on the show earlier in the week. The Big Three has allowed CBD effective June 27th. So effective immediately. What was your thought process going into that, and why do you think that's so important?
Well, a few of our players had mentioned it last season and asked us to really, you know, look into it. And so, you know, we spent, you know, time just really trying to figure out, you know, what it's all about. And once we knew that it was something that wasn't going to, you know, intoxicate our players or give them any kind of enhancement in their performance, then we said this is something we should really think about doing because athletes want it. And, you know, we talk about athletes and how much money they get for playing, but we never talk about or we rarely talk about how much pain they're in from day to day to, you know, make us all cheer and scream and yell. But they're, you know, dealing with a lot of pain. And if it's something on the market that can help them recover and help them feel better, then why not? And you know, I think we're on the right side of history because I think this is the future.
I was going to say, if that's the future, do you think that other pro leagues will see that and follow suit?
They should. And we don't mind, you know, we say that we are changing the game and we're changing it for the better. So, you know, other leagues should look at how we're handling it and maybe take suit, you know, because opioids is not the answer. You know, it's too many side effects. It's very addictive. So we want to do something that's an alternative to what's haven't really been working.
Once again, week three of the Big Three takes place tonight at Oracle Arena in Oakland. You can check that out, 7 p.m. Eastern on Facebook, 8 p.m. Eastern on Fox, the co-founder of the Big Three, Ice Cube, Mike Guest. Cube, great to have you back. Appreciate you in the conversation, as always, Cube. Thanks.
It's always good to talk to you, Jim, man. Thank you so much for helping to promote this league. You know, it's going to take people like you, man, to really get the word out there, and I appreciate it.
Let's go to the bra. Huntington Beach. Silk bra. Yo, bra, what's up? How are the swells?
Hey, Jimmy. How you doing, buddy? Hey, listen, having won the smack off myself years ago, I got to weigh in and say that Larry Parody's calls is probably one of the greatest calls I've ever heard. Come on.
All right, so what was the first dead giveaway that was not silk bra and I got hooked again? We're talking to Kevin Ioli. All right, so if he's that much, and by the way, he might be the greatest heavyweight in UFC history. If you're Stipe, what concerns you the most about Cormier?
His wrestling ability. I mean, Daniel is an Olympic-level wrestler, and while Stipe was a terrific college wrestler, the highest he was ranked was 17, and his MMA wrestling, I think, is better than his college wrestling. But, you know, Daniel has the ability to get him down, and Daniel's a great grappler. You know, I think clearly Stipe is going to have the advantage on the feet. He's got a big reach. He's got a big height advantage. He was a Golden Gloves boxer. He lost in the national tournament to Brian Jennings, who fought for the boxing heavyweight title against Klitschko. So he's a guy that, you know, is a very good boxer. You know, Daniel is a good striker, but not a great striker, but his wrestling. So I think what Stipe would have to worry about is, you know, being taken down and kind of mauled on the ground.
All right, so Kevin, I talked to Daniel yesterday, and we, of course, talked about the fact that styles make fights and that their styles actually on some level are pretty similar. How do you see this fight going?
Well, I think it's going to be a very simple fight. I think Stipe is going to want to create angles and try to load up to throw that right hand and hit Daniel with something and hurt him. I think Daniel is going to want to make sure that he moves away from that, you know, that right hand and shoot in a takedown. I mean, I think Daniel has to mix things up a lot more than Stipe is going to do because he's got to create that moment of indecision where Stipe doesn't know, is he going to throw a punch or is he going to shoot on me? And I think that's the key thing for Daniel. But I think, you know, it's going to be a very tactical fight, but they're going to be both winging bombs at each other. And the key is going to be, can Daniel get in deep and get that takedown? Can he double leg him? Can he get him to the ground and put him on his back? And if he can repeatedly do that early in the fight, then I think that changes the entire dramatic of the fight the rest of the way because it's going to force Stipe to change the way he approaches Daniel.
I love that matchup. Kevin Ioli joining us. All right, Kevin, yesterday also brought the news that Max Holloway had to pull out of UFC 226 because of concussion-like symptoms. That featherweight title fight against challenger Brian Ortega had a lot of buzz around it. So how disappointed are you purely as a fan not to have that fight?
Oh, I mean, hugely disappointed. You're talking two of the best fighters in the world. I mean, any weight class, Ortega and Holloway are tremendous fighters. And that fight was going to be spectacular. I think that would have been the best fight on the card. Fortunately, this is one of those cards where top to bottom, it was a sensational fight. They on the main card, they replaced Ortega and Holloway with Paul Felder and Mike Perry. That fight could have been on the main card to begin with. I mean, that's how good of a fight that was. But it's really sad. And, you know, I had an interview with Dana White last night, Jim, and one of the things he said about Max is there's some evidence that it's concussion-related. There's some evidence that it was weight cut-related. But he said there's also a thought that maybe Max had water intoxication. And so he discussed that a little bit, and that's a very serious issue too. So they're still doing tests on Max to try to figure out exactly what's going on.
Well, that's really interesting. And since you spoke to Dana White, what was your sense of his take on Ortega's decision not to take a replacement fight?
Well, I'll tell you this. I had an appointment to talk to Dana, and I was waiting at the Palms to talk to him, and I waited about an hour because Brian Ortega showed up and went in and they talked. And so I got a chance to ask Dana right afterwards, and he thought it was a mistake by Brian. He thought, you know, hey, you don't get a lot of opportunities, and it would have been a championship fight, and Brian would have had the belt had he beaten Jeremy Stevenson. You know, that has always been Dana's philosophy. I hit him with, I said, let's play the devil's advocate. What does losing this fight hurt the show? You're still got a great show, Lewis and Ngannou in the co-main event, the heavyweight title fight everybody's buzzing about. It's a deep card. There's a lot of good fights on the card. And this, there was nothing to gain by Brian fighting Jeremy because, you know, I wrote a piece earlier in the year saying how much improved Jeremy was and how dangerous he had become. He's a big dude. There's a chance he might not have made weight. And even if he made weight, you know, he was going to have a decided size advantage. He's got a totally different style. How does that benefit Brian on 48 hours notice to now have to, everything he prepared for in camp kind of change his footwork, change his thought process? To me, I think it was just a tough ask.
Kevin Ioli joining us. Kevin, before you go, I really want to ask you about Ronda Rousey because she was inducted into the UFC Hall of Fame yesterday. You've covered the fight game for a long, long time. Have you ever seen anybody with a career arc like the one Ronda had in the cage? I mean, that absolutely amazing rise and then the subsequent incredible fall.
It's totally stunning, and I've never seen that before. You always see signs in people, hey, they're starting to slow down, and even when they win, you know, they're not winning as impressively, and they're signed, they're getting hit more. Ronda, you know, you think her last three fights, she won, 16 seconds against Alexis Davis, 14 seconds against Catherine Gano, and then a minute and a half against Betch Kohea, and it's like she's at the top of her game, and then she gets routed by Holly Holm. She gets routed even worse by Amanda Nunes. I've never seen it before. I actually spent quite a bit of time talking to Dana about that yesterday, and if he could put his finger on it. And the only thing he offered for her was, you know, she got so big celebrity-wise that was really hurting her, but it was amazing how she kind of fell off the face of the earth. I mean, it was just, you know, this great fighter, untouchable fighter, and then all of a sudden, you know, she was a punching bag. It was amazing.
I mean, how do you explain that? I mean, like you said, you put it to Dana, and Dana said maybe it's because of the celebrity and she lost focus, but I mean, how do you explain that fall and the fact that she simply could not come back from it?
You know what I think is, like, if I picked Ronda to beat Holly Holm, so I don't want to, you know, sit here and now say I thought Holly was going to win. But I told people when I was asked before that, they said, make a case for Holly. I said, well, if you look at Ronda's fight with Sarah McMahon, Sarah McMahon is a wrestler, not noted as a striker. And she hit Ronda with a number of clean shots, but Ronda was able to take the shots, get into the clinch, and finish the fight quickly. And I think the thought process was going to be against Holly that's what would happen. Holly had the better striking, but Ronda would close the distance, eat a punch or two, get in the clinch, and either armbar or do something to finish the fight. And I think once she got hit and wasn't able to close the distance, I think she lost confidence. I mean, what you saw in the Amanda Nunes fight with Ronda Rousey was a fighter who had no confidence in her abilities. And that was the antithesis of what Ronda had been throughout her career, as she oozed confidence and she believed that she could beat anybody. You remember famously when she said, somebody asked her if she thought she could beat Cain Velasquez, and she said, I'll never say I can't do anything.
No, exactly right, Kevin. And I also think that, I mean, Amanda was one, I mean, I should say Ronda was one of those people, like, where she had that confidence where she had beaten opponents before they even got in the cage with her, the way Mike Tyson did way back in the day. But it's one thing to lose to Holly Holm, but then she came back against Amanda Nunes a year later and actually looked worse. How do you explain that? Was it just that her confidence was gone or something else?
I think the confidence was mostly it, but I think, you know, her camp never... You know, they were, like, I remember her camp for Betch Kohea and talking to Edmund, her trainer, Edmund Trevardian, And he was telling me, oh, she's beating the crap out of world champion boxers. And I said, well, who are these boxers? And it turned out they were like, you know, not world champion. They were 5-0 and 6-0 boxers. And, you know, I don't think that they ever really turned Ronda into a striker. And so her grappling was so good that she overcame her striking deficiencies. And like you said, it was very well documented in her career. She intimidated people and they were so worried about the armbar that, you know, they couldn't perform themselves. And I think, you know, Holly gave a game plan. Amanda then believed, you know, Amanda told everybody before what she was going to do, and then she went out and did it. And I think Ronda did not have the confidence in herself, and I think it was she was never developed as a striker, and so she never added to her skills in that department. And when she went in against a woman who was one of the best strikers in the world, she realized, I think, that she was short and didn't have any other bullets in the gun to fire.
Right. Kevin Ioli, my guest. Kevin, one last thought, and maybe it's a reach, and I'm not even saying that I'm making this reach, but I'll pose it as a question. Then you've got Conor McGregor, right? And, like, for instance, Ronda went from living in her car to being the face of the sport and a gigantic celebrity. Conor went from being a plumber's apprentice to also being the face of the sport and a gigantic celebrity. Now, when he met with adversity in the cage, he bounced right back. But is there a chance that this thing could completely spin out of control from Conor and that we don't see him again? And much like Ronda, maybe he's never anywhere near what he used to be and, in fact, have a great fall from grace himself?
I think Conor lives to fight. Now, I question whether he will fight again, but if he does, Jim, I believe he will be successful. Not to say he's going to win every fight he takes. You know, I think a fight with Khabib is going to be a very difficult matchup for him. But I think, you know, that you're not going to see him get beaten the way Ronda did in her last two fights and then go away. But I still question, because I know Dee Devlin, his significant other, the mother of his child, does not like him fighting. And now the guy's got over $100 million in the bank. He was fourth on the Forbes list this year. He was eighth last year, even before the Mayweather fight, for highest earners. He's got a ton of money in the bank. He doesn't need to do it. And your motivation is a lot different when you don't need to do it. And so I question whether he'll get in, because he understands the fight game so well. And I think he's so astute. He'll see what happened to Ronda. And if he realizes if his intensity is not there and his desire is not there, he's not going to fight. And my guess would be still that I don't think he fights.
Huh. So one last thought. If he does, though, if he fights Khabib, how do you think that would go?
I would favor Khabib in the fight. I would not say it would be a slam dunk win for Khabib, but I think Khabib's grappling is too good. I mean, you know, he's got elite level wrestling, very, very high level wrestling to get Conor to the ground. You know, certainly Al Iaquinta showed that, you know, Khabib has some work to do on the feet, and Conor is a great striker and has great kicks. But, you know, you would think that the kicks would be difficult against somebody like Khabib, because the threat of a takedown, if you try a kick and he catches that kick, you're in big trouble. And so I think, you know, I would favor Khabib to get a submission in the fight. But I would not discount Conor, but I would definitely favor Khabib.
What up, Van Smack?
Welcome to the jungle. What's going on? A very good Thursday morning to you. I am Jim Rome. How many of you thought that I was going to take the entire week off? All of you? Not me, because you know I grind hard. Yeah! LeBron James is a Los Angeles Laker.
This is not for you.
The best player in the game chose to be a Laker, and that hasn't happened in a very long time. And love him or hate him, do not tell me you're not watching this, because you are. You know you are.
Let's talk about Kawhi Baby Leonard.
Kawhi not!
The Frenchie, Tony Parker.
Ms. Parker?
Hurt your feelings. You don't deserve to play near the Alamo, Kawhi.
Daniel Cormier, how much would it mean to you to prove that you've earned that title as well?
Oh, Tim, that would be crazy. I'm a big boxing guy. Mike Tyson, Randall Holyfield, Lennox Lewis. The heavyweight boxing champ is regarded as the baddest man on the planet. Can't say that anymore. The baddest man on the planet is the UFC heavyweight champion.
In fact, this is your talk show. You take it over. Culver City. Des Moines. Lemon Grove. Is this on? Does anybody have a pulse out there? It's your show. You take it over.
And I was worried that Joey Nutt was going to have a third-degree blowout on stage. I mean, I've experienced a mudslide, and all you can do is deposit your brief behind the toilet bowl.
I'm not going to elaborate. I'm not going to spend any time on that. You know why he got run?
That punk Rex won't call our station. We'll spit out his bone.
Jones. That's not how we roll in Albuquerque. We don't want some creep.
Cousins, what's good?
DeMarcus Cousins agreed to a one-year deal with the Golden State Warriors.
Fat boy, how many you got,
NBA baby? Twitter lost its collective mind. Golden State built this monster legitimately, playing by the same rules as everybody else. They're just better. They're just smarter. Jarvis Landry, how good can this team be? Does it feel like a potential playoff team?
Man, for me personally, man, I train to win the Super Bowl every year. Hopefully that culture shift that's happening right now in the locker room, that begins to be the mindset of every player. And before you know it, you look and it's going to be January. Cleveland Browns will still be around.
Oh, my God!
Email. Got a new nerd? Who's the new member of the XR4TI? I do not have a new nerd. I got temporary nerd. Except the guy's not a nerd, man. He's just stepped right in off the street and he's killing it. And now you clones are. Can't wait to rip apart the new guy. Don't do it.
You better don't.
Isaiah P. joining us. And he says, quote, man, you could go to the Paralympics. So what was that moment like?
Yeah, it was cool. It was good. Because man, that's what we do. You know, we talk it up at that moment. Yet I was still trying to get out of this wheelchair and get standing up. So the fact that he even shouted it out, it was like, oh, man, we're on the same page.
I'm looking on the bright side here. People know me as this fluke who lost his ticket and got replaced in the smack-off field. But at least I'm not Luke Walton, who just got replaced by his new power forward.
That's what I just did there. I took away a ticket that he didn't have. That's how bad that was. How the hell I ever gave that guy a ticket to begin with? Lauren.
The whole thing about Mona, just want to throw out an apology about that.
Hi there.
I know I can beat Mona in the I'm going to tear her ticket up. I'll tell you that much. Kelly's head kind of looks like the warped wall from the American Ninja Warrior.
Looks like a big-ass thumb with hair.
I know I can do this, and I know I can run all day. Not run all day. I want to be racked.
Kawhi! Hiding from your team. Quick, man, get him out of here. Hey, Kawhi, there's a broom closet, man. Just stay there till they leave. Kawhi and his advisors couldn't look much worse if it is true. That is straight whack.
That's whack.
Lee Jenkins from Sports Illustrated.
Do you buy that report?
Yeah, I do. I do buy it. It's a great reporter and somebody who's well-sourced in that organization. So, no, I totally buy it because it's not a strong personality and it's not a big communicator.
Alfa Romeo, how's it going?
Twitter!
You might have wondered what happened to Ross from Friends. He's filling in this week.
What's up, Ross?
We were
man,
on
man, how
the
mighty have fallen.
Bro, didn't you used to make $1 million an episode with all the other knobs on Friends?
Hey,
damn, what's
doing?
Next? Is Chandler going to screen calls? We go to parody. Smack Larry.
Something for your favorite sparrow. So I guess that gimmicky big ears bitch gonna start working on a new angle if he wants.
Stick your horrible parodies. Good guy, bad call. Ice Cube is my guest.
You know, we already know what LeBron is gonna do, but you know, what are the other guys gonna do? You know, that's why I think Magic brought in players that wasn't necessarily just gonna bow down to how LeBron was.
Slicing your nose and moving it to another part of your face is not reinventing. It's getting carved. Yo, brah, what's up? How are the swells?
Hey, Jimmy, how you doing, buddy? Larry parodies calls, probably one of the greatest calls I've ever heard. Come on.
You've turned into the pet rock.
I don't root for anybody or anything except that you'll stop emailing.
Email. I just ate a big-ass bowl of honey smack.
You're as sharp as a spoon.
Don't talk to me, all right?
Knock it off.
Thank you, Jim. Thanks for having me again.
Carson City.
Like an undie.
I love you, Romy.
It's always good to talk to you, Jim, man. Thank you so much.
Eat a punch or two.
Bruh.
Come on.
Good night. Good night now.